This is The Takeaway with Tanzina Vega.
On Sunday, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Kansas City Chiefs face off in Tampa for Super Bowl 55. And like most things during the COVID-19 pandemic, it's going to look a lot different this year. The Super Bowl usually sells out, sometimes reaching more than 100,000 attendees. But this year, there'll be fewer than 25,000 fans because of the pandemic. The big event also comes at the end of a tumultuous season for the NFL, which saw the league keeping games going, even as multiple teams dealt with COVID-19 outbreaks. And the Super Bowl is also happening against the backdrop of ongoing scrutiny into the league's hiring practices, notably the absence of black hires in coaching and leadership positions. For more on this, we called up Michael Fletcher, senior writer for ESPN's Enterprise team. Michael, welcome back to the show.
Hey, good to be here.
That was, I have to say, that was a surprise from our control room, my first Super Bowl sounding introduction. Michael, let's start with the Super Bowl. What kind of safety measures have been put in place for the players, for the coaches, the staff, and the people who are supposed to show up?
Well, you know, everything is different this year, as you noted. The players are being tested, from what I understand, twice a day, and they have to pass those tests if they have any contact. If any exposure to the virus, they're held away from the team. Several Kansas City Chiefs are facing that now. There was a bit of an eruption when their team barber was tested positive and everyone had to be kept away. The normal media day, which is always a big spectacle at the Super Bowl, of course, had to be done virtually this year. And as you noted, the fans are going to be, you know, much reduced number of people in the stands. So overall, what you're going to have, in my mind, is a muted Super Bowl, even though it's a great matchup. You have these kind of legendary quarterbacks in their own way. But somehow the game is kind of under this pall that the entire country, the entire world is suffering right now.
So, Michael, after this year's regular season ended, there were six open head coaching positions. Only one of them went to a black coach. Another position went to the league's first Muslim American coach. But why is there a league where players are almost 70% black and it's failing to hire black coaches?
I mean, that's the million-dollar question, right? It's so, I think, infuriating to people who are kind of in those coaching pipelines. The league talks a good game. The league itself, you know, promotes the hiring of black coaches and black general managers and black team presidents. But somehow the owners are just not comfortable. That's the only thing you can say. Are just not comfortable with hiring black men or women in those positions. It's as simple as that. If you look at the Rooney Rule, for example, for years now, it's been almost two decades that the league has required teams hiring head coaches to interview at least one minority candidate. They recently bolstered that to two. They've incentivized teams to hire, or at least develop coaching candidates to give them extra draft choices if they develop people who are hired as team leaders. But if you step back from that, it's interesting that the owners are incentivizing themselves to do the right thing. It's just odd. I think, you know, it's a problem that you probably see not just in the NFL. It's glaring in the NFL, but you see this across this country, across corporate America, where particularly in these key leadership jobs, kind of the face of the franchise jobs, the face of the company jobs, you know, there's a real hesitancy to hire black people to run stuff. And I think it comes down to a kind of a comfortability. Because if you're an owner of a team, you want someone that you just 100% relate to run that team. That, in some ways, that's understandable. But what's disappointing is why black people cannot be in that number.
I agree with you there, Michael. I think there are lots of issues that prevent that from happening. And yet, this has also been an issue for black quarterbacks in the NFL. There have been some improvement in that area, right? There are more black quarterbacks now than there have been in the past?
Oh, absolutely. Now, you know, arguably, like, particularly this kind of coming generation of black quarterbacks, I mean, you look no farther than the Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes is kind of the standard bearer, if you will. You know, I think the consensus is that he's the most talented, the greatest, the best quarterback in the game right now. And he's just you know, one of many. I mean, he's the biggest name. I turn on my TV. I can't. Every time I turn it on a Sunday, I see him on my screen playing football and making all kinds of commercials. Right. So these guys are huge. These guys are definitely, you know, Mahomes is one, and others will be. You know, people talk about Deshaun Watson. He's considered a top five quarterback. Lamar Jackson was last season's MVP, like the previous season to this one. Kyler Murray was a top pick 2 years ago with the Arizona Cardinals. So you have black quarterbacks, you know, kind of on the rise in the NFL. And I think that ceiling has been broken. You know, I think coaches and teams are now comfortable with black quarterbacks and kind of if their style of play, if you will. Not that there's one style of play, because black quarterbacks play just like anybody else. But in the past, the knock was, or the stereotype was, that black quarterbacks are quote-unquote dual-threat quarterbacks, which the word's a good thing in football. You can run and you can pass. But somehow that used to bear a negative connotation, that somehow if you're a good runner, you can't be a good passer. But a lot of these guys in the league now have proven out to be just a myth. The black quarterback myth has been put to rest. I hope it has. It apparently has. And hopefully that will soon be the case for coaches, even though the progress has been negative progress. We've actually seen slippage in that area, but maybe that'll change.
Michael, one of the things the Super Bowl is known for is advertising. Several major brands, including Coke and Budweiser, which are huge brands, are not running ads during the broadcast this year. What's behind that?
I think they don't want to feel tone deaf at this point. I can't remember which company is going to actually give the money they would normally spend on a Super Bowl commercial to the ad council to talk about vaccine awareness, I believe. So, again, the COVID situation just intrudes everywhere. You know, we're so used to seeing those Clydesdales, and people talk about, what interesting commercial will come up, and I'm sure it'll be interesting commercials. But again, this damper from the pandemic is hitting there. Well, what I've read is that some of the companies that have sort of done well in the pandemic, the DoorDashes and people like that, will be advertising. But again, you have this kind of pall that I think hangs even over the advertising.
One bright spot potentially in this weekend's festivities will be National Youth Poet Laureate Amanda Gorman, who caught all of our eyes and attention for her fantastic performance at the inauguration last month. She will be performing at the Super Bowl, and she is the first poet to ever perform at the event. What do you make of that, Michael?
I think it's great, hey, but what a platform, right? And it's a great platform for the music performance, and it'll be for her as well. You know, but I can't help but be a little cynical about the NFL's intentions here. You know, people talk about virtue signaling rather than doing stuff. Like, and we just talked about the problems the league has for whatever reason, in hiring black leadership. You know, but this is something they can do, right? We saw this at the beginning of the year after the uprisings across the country this summer with the NFL, you know, its kind of sudden embrace of Black Lives Matter. And, you know, to be fair, they weren't alone. The NFL did that just like the other sports leagues, just like much of corporate America. So in my mind, it's a great platform, but I think it's the NFL's way of trying to say we're with the times. We understand kind of the social currents in our country, and we want to signal to the world that we're with that.
Michael, the Super Bowl is usually something that people gather in large events and folks shouldn't be doing that this year because of the pandemic. People, Anthony Fauci, among others, have told people to stay home and celebrate at home. Do you have any plans on how you're going to watch the game on Sunday?
No Super Bowl parties here, I'm telling you that. I think there was a poll maybe a week ago. Hopefully it's changed, but I read where 25% of Americans still plan to get together with friends to watch the game. Now, myself, I think I'll try to find a chicken wing recipe of some kind, bake some wings, and maybe make a small pitcher of margaritas and watch the game by myself. And if there's an especially exciting moment, I'll yell out to my wife to come watch the replay, and I'm sure she'll say, It looks like the last replay you had me look at, you know, months ago. But
I suspect there will be many.
Alone.
Michael, I suspect you won't be alone in that experience, at least collectively. Michael Fletcher is the senior writer for ESPN's Enterprise team. Michael, thank you so much, and enjoy those wings.
All right, thank you so much.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.